We're gonna talk.
Welcome. This is Taking It Down, the Alabama Takes Pop Culture Podcast. I am your host, Blaine Duncan, and in a second, I'm going to talk to Adam Morrow, and I'm going to talk to Donovan Ron Walden. They're going to be joining me to talk about the HBO series Mayor of Easttown, the finale of the Disney Plus series Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and I'm going to ask Donovan about the Amazon Prime show Them to see if we're going to go forward with that one at all. Sadly, no Natalie Morrow for the podcast to talk about MCU stuff, although we will discuss that Disney Plus show's ending. But before we get into things, there is a quick announcement I want to make on the front end. I'll also bring it up probably again. The Alabama Takes debut YouTube series Short Takes will air this coming Friday, April 30th, pending no disasters. You can find our YouTube icon on our website. Click on it and then subscribe to the YouTube channel so you don't miss a thing and you can be dialed in to the new talk show coming Friday. But let's get into our show today. Welcome, Adam. Welcome, Donovan. You guys say your hellos there.
Adam, would you describe the Super League as a quick bite or a quibby?
Is that the joke?
It's the joke.
He's been waiting. He told us I have a joke, and Blaine said, should I set it up? And Donovan said, fear not, I will force it in no matter what. Yes, that was the QB.
It's a quick bite, wasn't it?
Of sports expansion. I will say, even if you're not a soccer fan, the New York Times ran an incredible piece on Friday, I believe, about the rise and fall of the Super League. If you have any interest in sport and how rich people think and how that leads to their own demise, then I highly recommend it.
Yeah, if your book of life says take dead aim at the rich ones and you circled that,
yes,
you better read this article.
Thank you, Bill Murray.
All right.
So it was we usually talk about our pop culture of the week. Most of mine was spent staring into a dark hole, a void, trying to avoid thinking about the Super League and just how terrible that would be for my sporting life. And now it has not come to pass.
There were 12 hours where it was pretty scary, and then Chelsea immediately started to backpedal. And it all, and like, Boris was mad. Prince William was tweeting.
Nobody's happy.
Paris Saint-Germain preemptively told them to fuck off.
Incredible stuff.
Just good stuff.
Good to see people rally around something.
It was a real, like, you know, the peasants or like the aristocracy during the French Revolution, like, why don't the peasants love us moment? Like, what is their problem?
That's so great.
Equivocate this for me. Are we talking like if Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, and Oklahoma wanted to go form their own NCAA division?
Well, what's funny about it is kind of, but college football already, if you really want to start pulling at the strings, already operates this way where...
Yeah, they do.
There were going to be 15 teams who automatically got to play in this league, and five teams could play their way into it. But with soccer, no team is ever guaranteed their place in any league, according to current format, outside of the MLS. You know, if you do poorly, you get relegated. If you do well, you get promoted. So there is always the pressure of competition on everything.
There's no probationary period, like if you don't, you got a year to do better?
No. If you are in the bottom three of the Premier League, you are going down to the second tier.
Okay.
Where you have a chance to come back up. And things like the Champions League, which the Super League was trying to replace, the top four from specifically the English Premier League get to play in the Champions League. So there's always the possibility that a smaller club can play their way into that competition where there's more money, more exposure, all these kind of things. And to hoard all of that influence, money, and power just to these 15 teams creates this ripple effect that, you know, disproportionately supports the big teams and slowly erodes the middle and lower class of top flight soccer. That's pretty much it. And it was great to see it defeated, and I was very cynical that public outcry could do anything. I'm sure we all feel that way after the last year, that it's a Sisyphean effort to to voice an opinion and to try to make a difference, especially with big business, which this is one of the biggest businesses on the planet. So it's very exciting.
You forget how, or we forget how soccer hooligans can really organize when they get their mind to it. Just everything with like blocking the buses and I mean, it was like the people rose up, like they're hanging banners about it. This is very funny.
Oh yeah.
Now what buses were they blocking? I've heard about this. What,
the team
who
buses,
was on the bus?
The teams were attempting to get to the stadium to play a game in London for Chelsea at Stamford Bridge there, and the fans just refused to move out of the road, and Chelsea sent out Peter Cech, who is a club legend. I'm trying to think. This is like the equivalent of like a maybe not. He didn't win like the Heisman of that world, but it would be like a Mark Ingram, you know, who is Bama through and through, has remained loyal to his alma mater.
A Bo Jackson kind of guy?
No, not that level. Not that level. But somebody who is like, you identify as like, this is a Bama player, and they send him out to try to quell the crowd in Tuscaloosa, and the crowd just tells him to eat shit. You know what I mean? The crowd was so worked up. They weren't having it. It was pretty wild to watch. They were not going to be placated.
Well, yeah. It's a good thing that it didn't happen in the U.S. because it's legal to run those people over now.
Exactly.
Only in Florida.
Well,
and Alabama.
You just
and
wait.
Mississippi. And Tennessee.
Yeah. Right. Well, Donovan, you had the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. Do you want to vouch for its safety?
You know, it's wild because you were all telling me about a couple folks that had a rough day or two. With the Johnson & Johnson, and I heard about some other people. I had two Sundays ago, probably towards the latter half of the day, a little soreness, a little tiredness. I was prepared to tell my work on Monday, like, hey, I need a sick day. I got up Monday morning, felt great. I've had no, and now I'm fully vaccinated, which puts me in the overclass, whereas people who are not fully vaccinated or in sort of an underclass. You guys get it.
They're going to be relegated to.
Yeah,
They're going to be relegated to staying at home.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
I've done my 2 weeks. So I'm ready.
No blood clots. No.
Yeah.
Well, I think I don't know if finding the Super League thing very funny is a side effect of the J&J vaccine. So maybe there are some. That
well,
could be.
Listener Trey Irby and writer for the website had wanted us to make sure you were doing well. He's the only person who expressed concerns.
It's like, yeah, well, we haven't heard from him for about 2 weeks, but. You know, they say
sure
the shot's safe.
You have been especially quiet on socials.
Well, yeah, I'm. You know,
let the mystery reign, huh?
Let the mystery. You know, how can I listen to the Lord's voice if I'm tweeting?
Great, that's great. Well, I got you on the spot, Donovan. Let's get you to talk to us a little about the new Amazon Prime anthology series that's called Them. This entry was created by Little Marvin. It's set in 1953, and from what I gather through the genre of horror, it's examining racism in America, much like Lovecraft Country kind of did recently, but we're going to get into that a little with some of my questions I have for you. It's gotten some really mixed reviews, but
there seems to be like a couple people in the middle. Some people that are like, this is pretty good, and then some people who are like, this is, I felt vile after watching this.
Just to wrap the intro or the synopsis, the big idea is about a black family who moved from North Carolina to L.A. in 1953, and if you want any more information about that, that's about all I can give you. But I do have questions for Donovan, who's watched the first episode. So, just overall, general non-spoilery thoughts. What did you think about the first episode?
So, it strongly reminded me of the Haunted House episode of Lovecraft Country, which I did think was one of the stronger ones.
Mm-hmm.
The show looks great, right? Like, the directors they've got with it. I mean, it's different directors, right? It's not all one director, but it's directed well. It's acted very well. Allison Pill is sort of one of the main antagonists, blonde-haired Betty. And sort of rallying the neighborhood to harass them. And so I'm either cautiously optimistic or whatever the opposite of that is, because kind of reading reviews, it seems like they said the beginning was sharper and stronger than the end, and especially some of the episodes in the middle are apparently pretty gruesome and brutal. And do I need to see that? You know, I kind of felt that way about the horror in Lovecraft Country towards the end. It didn't seem like there was much point to it except, say, violence or comeuppance, if you will. So I'm not sure that I need to watch a family be tortured for 10 episodes. So I'm not sure. The acting is phenomenal, though. And it starts out pretty well. Spoiler alert.
Okay.
The dog dies. Don't get attached to that dog.
Don't like that.
Yeah, count me out already. What keeps this show from being the Haunted House episode of Lovecraft Country?
Well, they did it in one episode, whereas this one is like the first 5 minutes of that.
So that's it?
I mean, I wouldn't say that's exactly it, right? Like they've got the neighbors, right, harassing them. Things such as, well, they kill the dog, they poison the dog, but things like they come and play their radio, you know, everyone plays their radio outside, just like we saw in the Lovecraft Country episode. And everyone's kind of got like their own demons, right? Like there's four members of the family, and each four of them have like the little kids reading a creepy book. And so I don't yet know that there is that much to separate it. So what would be the opposite of cautiously optimistic? Like slightly pessimistic?
I think so. We'll take it. Do you think you'll continue to watch it?
Honestly, reading some of these reviews, apparently it gets pretty brutal and horrifying. I'm not sure if I will.
Why is that? So because you like horror genre and movies?
I do, but I don't like kind of that torture porn.
Right.
Where that there really doesn't seem to be any point, but just seeing how miserable and harrowing we can make another human being's experience, you know, that's not fun for me.
Does it veer in that, according to reviews?
Yeah, according to that.
So, now, not as bad as, like, Saw, though, right?
No, not
like
that. Saw movies? I do have a plug. See, I knew I was going to kind of give a bad review for this.
Okay.
Another related haunted house movie with black actors, mm-hmm. But it's English instead, or British film, is His House, mm-hmm. which stars, I'm probably going to mispronounce her name, and I apologize for that, Wunmi Mosaku, who was in Lovecraft Country as the sister, the
right, yes.
singer.
She was great.
Excellent. She's excellent.
She had the ability to like turn white, drink the stuff,
yep.
and turn, that, okay, yeah, that's sister.
And it follows two, a husband and wife, a couple, mm-hmm. who are refugees from Sudan, and they have been granted temporary, you know, refugee status in the United Kingdom, and they have a house, and it is haunted. They have this council flat they're given, and it really works.
Yeah, that one's on Netflix, and
that one's on Netflix.
Talking it up in more thorough manner here on the show, but just never got around to it. But you do recommend that one?
I would give that one a big thumbs up. Okay. It, you know, there is, not that horror only has to do this, mm-hmm. but the way the horror is connected to being alone in a country that's not yours and maybe doesn't even want you.
Yeah.
It's the scariest experience I can think of, which is being a refugee. I can't think of anything in real life maybe scarier than that.
Well, that's odd, because I think my genitals falling off is much more scarier.
Honestly, I'd take it.
It's weird that you bring that up, because I have this fear of my teeth falling out. No, I mean, that's it. That's my joke. No one has that reoccurring nightmare?
I think you should. I've only had it once or twice in my life. I much, much more have like the one that I'm falling.
Okay. That's a good dream for me. It always turns into flying.
Yeah.
Not always for me. Sometimes it. But yeah, the horror is really connected to the basically the trauma they've gone through as refugees, and the answers are not simple, which I kind of liked, and mm-hmm. the characters aren't simple.
And that, I don't know that that's been examined a ton. I know that you said that that's a horror does examine things like that, but as yeah, a refugee not, from Sudan, I don't think so.
It felt unique to me.
Yeah. Now on Letterboxd, you only gave that movie like 2.5 stars, right?
Nah, man. I usually don't do stars on Letterboxd because I'm usually like I'm not in a star mood. So it'll be like I didn't like it. And then if I've seen it a couple of times and I'm like this is 5 or 4 stars at whatever it does, then I give it 5 stars. Sometimes if I really hate it, it's 1 or 2. No, I gave Legally Blonde 3 stars.
That's right.
Yeah, there we go.
Well, let's shift gears and talk about that first episode of the new HBO show starring Kate Winslet. It's called Mare of Easttown. It aired a week ago. We've only watched the first episode, though by the time we drop our podcast, there will have been 2. The background of the show is that Kate Winslet is a detective in a small town who investigates a local murder. And honestly, that doesn't even happen in the first episode. And it even sounds like familiar territory. So what we want to do is get into whether it's worth our listeners' time and maybe what sets it apart. And we are going to spoil the first episode completely, but that's as far as we've watched. The show also stars Gene Smart, Guy Pearce, and I'll be damned if it doesn't have Evan Peters coming, but he's not in the first episode. That Evan Peters, there he is again. So I think Adam and I have watched this one. Donovan, you have not.
I have not yet gotten around to watching this.
Okay. Yeah. Then what do you think, Adam? I'll let you set the stage on general thoughts.
I'll tell you my impression going in, knowing nothing except it's a Kate Winslet detective story, that it ended up being true. I thought when somebody this good with this track record is given an HBO show, it's gonna be at least a solid B from me. You know, it's almost like this pickup team has an NBA player on it. Like, it's gonna be good. I think she's one of those caliber performers, actors, and it held up for me. And I thought the first episode, I don't know how detail-oriented you want to go immediately, but...
Well, we're gonna spoil the first episode for sure.
I thought that it was really good. I thought that it reminded me a bit in mood of I Know This Much Is True.
It really did.
The Mark Ruffalo HBO series from around this time last year. This is, I believe, in rural Pennsylvania instead of fully-fledged New England like Ruffalo's was. But it kind of does the same thing. And maybe I'm a bit fascinated by these small-town shows in other places because you drive by them and you always wonder, what would it be like to live there?
Yeah.
You know, like you try to project, like, what would I be as a person? What?
Absolutely.
What is average life for these people? And I thought, if we don't mind spoilers, I thought that it, in one episode, through a strong ensemble cast effort, really painted in detail with a broad brush. Like, this show could have only lingered on... You know, it opens on that kind of bizarre scene where the older woman calls Kate Winslet directly into, like, a pervert has been by the house, she suspects. So you've got kind of, like, quirky people like that, and it could have leaned all the way into quirky small-townness. And then you've got a woman who's her good friend, and you find out later that they were on the high school basketball team together. They've known each other forever, old small-town friends. Her brother is a drug addict who's broken into her house and stolen things. And you think, well, this could be about the how drugs have run amok in small-town America and ruined mm-hmm. these people's lives. And it just goes through all of these hats that it could have been, and it comes out on the other side being very much its own thing, I thought. I thought it was a really strong first episode with already compelling characters and storylines. They don't spoon feed how everyone is connected. You kind of have to pay attention. You know, people are related to each other, be they grandmother to grandchild or brother sister or father daughter, wife ex-wife, blah blah blah, and they they lay out the puzzle before they give you the answers. Yeah. And the answers tend to fly fast. And I thought it almost kind of David Simon-esque in that way that it slowly came together. Not quite that sprawling. It would have taken him 5 episodes to to make some of the connections they made in one. But that's a long-winded way of saying I really enjoyed the first episode.
No, there's a fine line between having a world fully realized and confusing the audience. And I got to admit, I was baffled by the casual name drops throughout. I was particularly thrown by Kate Winslet's mare, M-A-R-E, telling the pet store salesman that she was buying a turtle aquarium for her grandson. And right. I kept thinking, there's no way. She's also involved with a basketball celebration that was the 25th anniversary of a particular game that she played in high school. And I kept thinking the basketball celebration would have only put her between 43 and 46 at the very oldest. And it turns out that she is a grandmother. So that has yet to be explored or detailed for us. And I don't know what the hell it is with me and these simple yet mesmerizing establishing shots of an HBO drama.
Beautiful open to the show.
I mean, I think part of it is I've always have this warranted hope for them to be really good and to capture my attention. But this one opens with this box of a house and then a graveyard in Easttown. I'm assuming they're filmed in Easttown or somewhere in Pennsylvania. And I was sold just on an opening shot, an establishing shot, which is part of my faith, I guess, in most HBO shows. And when you see someone like Kate Winslet sign onto a show, you think that she's probably read the script and found it to be good enough for her time. And, you know, and that's kind of what you pointed out.
Yeah, and I think that proves true. I totally agree. Those opening shots, there was one that put a bunch of chimneys, this whole row of houses. I just thought it the way that they build a town, again, with its bright spots and its darkness, you know, it could just be this grimy thing because the weather is overcast. It's November in rural Pennsylvania. It's a bit grimy. It's a bit, you know, she makes a remark that says to her daughter about applying to college, like, I didn't have these advantages and that's kind of why I'm stuck here. And 10 or 15 years, you can look back on this moment as when you got out and made a better life for yourself, all these kind of things. So that, to me, it's colliding things that even very good shows don't always try to do. You know, like, her daughter is living in a very different world than the one that she grew up in, whereas I think a lot of times it would be just darkness, only darkness. And maybe it's going to go that direction, but it seemed to very well balanced. It feels real, you know?
Yeah, and you talked about how you got similar vibes from this, and I know this much is true. Some of that is just Mare, the protagonist. She just puts up with a lot of bullshit.
She does. She gets a lot of bullshit from other people about her own attitude, but as she, you know, the first episode presents her as going through a day with 1,000 plates spinning in the air that she's responsible for, and any gruffness that she has developed is the result of becoming a mother at a young age and still having this job that's hyper stressful as a detective and figuring all this out and now having a grandkid to raise, which they only reveal, I assume, why the grandkid is there in the closing scene, which is heartbreaking. So she's got a lot on her plate and a lot of plates in the air.
There's lots of disdain floating through these scenes.
She's got a lot of hate.
Yeah. Lots of sometimes passive, sometimes not so passive anger, I guess. I have two Adam Morrow specific questions about the first episode, though.
Oh, God. Okay.
How well did you like that Merton quote from the episode?
Loved it. Whenever he started quoting Merton, there's a priest who is her
cousin.
Uh-huh. Who she comes home to find the priest is mixing up drinks with her mom, right?
Yeah.
Like they're having like a little social, they're chilling, having a little social hour.
Hell yeah.
And he sends in a Merton quote to the conversation. And I was, you know, I was already pretty in, and I've never heard HBO use Thomas Merton in casual conversation here. But the quote was something like, God is really in people's minds, God is like a reflection of themselves more than mm-hmm. has more to do with them than an actual God entity. So you're kind of trying to figure out where how that's going to play out, because that was really the only like big quote that got dropped in. Like, if it was trying to, am I right in that, Blaine? Like, it wasn't like they're like dropping, you know, nobody talked about Emerson or something next, or nobody talked about whatever. Like, that's the only kind of like abstract thing that entered this story.
Yeah. That's the only one I heard. And that's Mayer's daughter who had the band.
Yes.
And they're good.
They are good.
Man, I was like, let's go check this band out. There's no way they're this good.
How did they get that good? How do they know the musical taste of teens in a tiny town? I'm very impressed.
Hey, you know, the internet's a beautiful thing.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. So these are people with problems on top of problems. We got the one of the ladies who played basketball with Mayer, also in the 25th anniversary celebration. She has cancer and has had a missing daughter for a year. She's blaming the police for not finding anything about that, about her. We haven't talked about the young girl who lives at home with her probably abusive father. She's a mother, and she doesn't seem to be, but like somewhere between 14 and 17. The father to that baby, he's a Dylan, no less, as you could imagine. So it's her ex-boyfriend, father to her baby, a definite asshole. He lets his new girlfriend catfish his ex-girlfriend and baby mama so they can beat her up outside of a local teen party.
That was some bleak stuff. Everything about her story was, you know, they cast somebody who, I didn't look up her name, but she did such a good job of having like the purity in her eyes, you know, that was kind of seemed to be undiminished. She looked very innocent. And
yes, she did. She thought she was going to meet an attractive teen guy, maybe a possible new boyfriend interest. And she goes, and it's her ex-boyfriend, who's also the dad to her baby. And
she's trying hard the whole
episode.
Girlfriend
is a real bitch. Yeah.
The poor young mother is trying hard to take care of the baby and provide for her dad, and it was just so sad, and you're rooting for her. And she has that one moment where she goes to her friends, and they talk about the boy she's going to meet. And when she announces that she's meeting him at this, like, the classic high school hangout spot, I thought the friend was going to say, are you really going to go meet this random guy? Like, under this bridge, basically. And I thought, well, clearly we have an innocent young girl and a detective kind of taking up our time here. Something bad is going to happen to this young woman. I thought, well, this is it. And so that was when the catfishing, when it was revealed, caught me by surprise in a very good way.
Me too. It'll be interesting to see which of these threads gets pulled by the show and the writers as for primary and secondary stories and themes, I guess. I'm really interested in that. But we don't get the inciting incident until the very last scene, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's the very last shot, even, maybe, almost. We get a dead girl in the water. And, like,
a Laura
just
Palmer,
a minute.
If you will.
A Laura Palmer, if you will. And just a minute before the show ends, it scared me to death. The scariest damn thing I've seen on TV in a while. And I don't think it was even meant to be scary, and I don't think this is where the show's going at all. But there's a guy who wasn't in the room, but he's not physically in the room, but she sees him in the room. It was quite a Ledger Domain that really worked, because it's not that kind of show. It's not
that scared
a ghost. I watched the show about 1 a.m. and
yeah,
when that guy, it didn't like scare me. Like, oh, I didn't scream, but it just took me by such surprise. I was not expecting that.
That's her son,
get
right?
That little stop in the heart, right? Little catch.
Yeah, it did. It gave me that, because he was projected in a different light. It was just well done. And maybe it is her son.
Because the kid is saying, I'm naming it Kevin after my dad. He liked turtles too. And she, Kate Winslet's Mayer, says he sure did. And they like, she ends up falling asleep on his bed with him. Wakes up, looks at the turtle, and then looks at the foot of the bed, and he's sitting there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's creepy.
It's very creepy.
Okay. I'm just glad I wasn't the only one.
I mean, it didn't scare me, but it was, it's weird. I took it more as, it was more sad than scary to me.
Yeah. Great direction with this opening episode. Did you notice that the girl who we've been talking about, the young mom who lives with the abusive father and everything, her opening shot was of her laying on a bed on her bed with her arm thrown back, and that was the exact same way she was in the creek.
Very sad. Very sad to see. And it will be interesting to... You mentioned in the rundown of the basketball team and the woman, Mayor's former teammate who now has cancer and has the missing, probably deceased daughter, how that her blaming the police is really eating at Mayor because she's taking it personally. And that's, you know, she got chewed out the day before because there hadn't been any new leads in that case. And obviously that is going to loom large over, I would think, the investigation of this young woman.
Yeah, for sure. This is an excellent show. I'm really excited to see where it goes. I'm not as interested in the whodunit stuff. I usually am not. Though, of course, everyone online is saying that it's Guy Pearce's character who's behind it. But who cares?
How do they already know that?
You know how the internet it works. They want to figure everything out instead of just letting it come to them. So I'm letting this show come to me. It looks like it's going to be an excellent one. Let's take a break. On the other side, we're going to talk Falcon and the Winter Soldier. Well, we do not have advertising, but there are costs of doing business. You, the listener, you would love to help, but you're thinking how. So go to thealabamatake.com, click on shop. You can purchase anything from our store, from t-shirts to coffee mugs, or you can just visit our site and click on the drop-down menu for donate. And just directly donate if you would like. We at Taking It Down are out every Tuesday morning, and each Thursday, the music/comedy podcast, This Song Sucks, drops new episodes. I think they have two more left in their first season. It's coming to its final episode. That doesn't mean you can't catch up with previous ones. I encourage you to do that. Lastly, as we mentioned at the start of today's show, The Alabama Takes is proud to debut our first YouTube series, Short Takes, which is a talk show. You will be able to watch it on our website or through our YouTube channel. Find that YouTube channel by going to our site and clicking on the YouTube icon. The very first episode begins Friday, April 30th. That first season will carry on through May and probably some of June. Be sure to check it out, subscribe to our podcast, and visit our site. We'll get back into our show, Taking It Down. Well, right now we would bring in one of our favorite co-hosts, maybe our very favorite co-host, Natalie Morrow, but she's out of pocket.
I was left with notes, though.
Well, good thing husband Adam Morrow is around because he's got the notes. So we're going to use some of her notes, some of Adam and Donovan's thoughts as well, to sort through the final episode of Falcon and the Winter Soldier from Disney+. We're going to spoil it. If you haven't watched, come back. And, you know, argue with us mentally or online. you want me to get us started here, guys? Or do y'all have just some really pressing thoughts?
The way that she gave me these notes could be a funny way for me to read these and then just let y'all y'all have at it. Because I did not go there with her to finish the show. So I will leave it up to
y'all. Oh, so you haven't watched it?
No.
Oh, wow.
This was her area of expertise. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. So let's hear these.
Let's hear them rolled out.
It's going to be six total thoughts. She started it. I'm just reading verbatim what she gave me, and she told me, just read this.
I love it.
So here we go. Natalie Morrow says, overall rating, B-. Point number one, Uncle Sam is the new Captain America. Point two, Wakanda did him dirty with that costume. Sure, it's comic book accurate, but the half-face hood thing looks so dumb. 3. Why is Buck still called Winter Soldier? Just seems mean. 4. Is the shield from another dimension or timeline, since Thanos destroyed the original but Steve comes back with a new one? 5. Isaiah Bradley was the first Black Cap. His grandson is an Avenger to be. There have been some subtle hints that we may be getting a young Avengers storyline. perhaps in the Hawkeye show. So she seems to be excited for that. And then her final point, did Bucky have a first edition Hobbit, and is that how he can afford rent? So those are her thoughts.
Those are good questions.
That's a wide array of thoughts.
I think she went shotgun approach with that one. Just
yeah, she well they were fantastic.
I agree with her for Wakanda. Like clearly they were getting back at him. Wakanda was getting back at him for something.
The suit didn't do him any favors, huh?
It certainly did not.
Yeah, I've seen more than just Natalie complain about the suit, and in hopes that they'll, you know how they change the suits from movie to movie and tweak them, so there's some hopes that he'll have a little bit better version of that in the future.
You know, I think I'd give, maybe I was a little less high on it than Natalie, but I think I'm in the B minus C plus range here. Did you just give a shit about anything that happened in this last episode? Because I don't think I did.
Yeah, I did. But...
like John Walker bangs his shield together in the extra credit scene and it gets broken in 10 seconds and he's a good guy again.
So the last episode just dropped the ball over each time. I don't know if you guys read Alan Sepinwall's reviews on Rolling Stone. He's a pretty renowned TV critic, and he did not like the episode. And I understood exactly where he was coming from. He points out that every scene with any sort of development didn't have a line of reasoning that established it at any point before.
Absolutely. And I felt like, we'll see where they continue to go with this, but it felt like, obviously they're saying like, hey, this show is more political, right? This is more, it felt very muddled. Felt politically muddled. Mm-hmm. It felt, it felt a little unrealistic. And who cares that Sharon is the power broker?
Me either. That was one of my least favorite things, is that Sharon Carter making her the power broker. Everyone guessed it, but so what? It just does not seem like the character that we knew. I know we only know a little about her anyway. She's only appeared probably a total of 40 minutes in all of the movies.
If that.
And yeah. But at the same time, that did not feel like who she was or... her background?
No, I mean...
It felt shoehorned, you know?
Sorry, whoever you are that plays this, but I don't think you're a very good actor.
The Sharon Carter lady?
Yeah, I think she just brings down in every scene she's in.
I don't think she's good enough to carry this.
She's the weakest link.
Well, that's a good point. But you're right, you know, Sepinwall also argues that the John Walker character is just suddenly supposed to get our sympathy and goodwill.
Like, he seemed like he was going to break bad. And then he's a good guy again.
And then he shows up and everybody's like, hey, dude, thanks for showing up.
Oh, it's U.S. agent. Okay. I mean, here's how I thought it was bad when Selena Myers. Selena Kyle's Catwoman. Selena Myers, a.k.a. Julia Louis-Dreyfus, shows up. And I was like, I love her, right?
Who doesn't?
I forgot that she was in this show.
Yeah.
From last episode to this episode. I just didn't care. That's not a good sign.
Yes, I did not care much about this at last episode. I thought everything up to this last episode was pretty good. I really liked how they discussed how race was a factor in how America views its heroes. I thought that was something that they could have really tore into. But again, it's a PG-13 MCU show. I get that they kind of pumped the brakes a little on that, but still, it was, I don't know.
It was very interesting, kind of like a pretty standard, kind of lazy, but I mean, it's true, critique you can level at these is that the superheroes are really just fighting for the status quo, right? Like, they're just fighting to keep the, you know, that you have villains like, come on, help me out, Killmonger, right? He wants to upend everything, really. And, you know, they're fighting for the status quo, and a couple villains are like that. And it was kind of interesting to see this show really kind of be like pretty explicitly like, yeah, the fight we're fighting, it's for things to basically be the same. And like Sam does his speech, and apparently things change a little bit, but they've never been quite as explicit about that, which is probably neither here nor there. I just thought it was somewhat interesting.
I saw a great tweet this week that was not specific to this show, but just said, it's interesting that for the last 15 or 20 years, so many superhero villains have been trying to address real issues, but through the wrong means. And the heroes very rarely actually fix the problem. They just defeat the villain.
Yeah, that's something Marvel could do, is just flip the script on that. Just have the next series. Who we got? Loki? So it's not going to happen there. But let's just say the next time they bring up Winter Soldier or this new Captain America, that they have them trying to fix climate change or, you know, or overpopulation, you know. Let's do this. Hey, that would be fascinating to me.
How big of a boner do you think the writers got when they realized that somebody in their review would be able to say the butler did it?
Jesus Christ. So that was
probably,
mad, right?
Probably a pretty big one, right?
I'm going to go with you and say, yeah, sure. That's such a non-thing to happen. I guess they just wanted a bow on...
I guess no more super soldiers out there, I guess. You know, we got to see Zemo looking smug in whatever that high security prison is, and that's about it.
Seppenwall's review complains about the fight scenes being too dark, which that didn't have a sway on me one way or the other. I thought they were fun.
I thought they were pretty good.
I did too. I actually thought that the action was quite good. It was intriguing to me that they were back in New York City to fight. Don't you know those people in New York City are tired of this shit? This is going to do nothing but wrap up an Andrew Yang victory.
You know, I agree with Natalie. Why are they still calling him Winter Soldier? He's been through therapy. He ought to be at least Spring Soldier now.
Well, he's the White Wolf in Wakanda. They could go by that, right?
I think he should be the Summer Soldier. Completely don't turn his back on his former life.
I am the Summer Soldier now. Can't you tell by my tan? So, Donovan, I have to ask. I don't have to ask, but I will. Is this show... If they would have had maybe two or three more episodes and then developed some of these things we're complaining about, does that fix it, you think?
It doesn't hurt it. I do think that being only six episodes kind of hurt it, and they were a little all over the place. Although, I mean, if you're biting off more than you can chew for six episodes, does having nine or ten, do you get a whole lot better at telling the story all of a sudden?
Right.
It's really funny. This show felt more even though it's like these are the big name guys and this is obviously like setting up future movies. This one felt much more and small time and TV, like kind of like it's over on the side, than WandaVision did. For whatever reason. I don't know why that is. WandaVision just felt like bigger and more assured of itself. And, it all kind of collapsed at the end.
And you do wonder how much of that has to do with COVID.
That's a fair question.
It is. So maybe they'll get it right next time. This one was a bust. I think a last episode can really make or break a show for me. One of my biggest qualms about one of the biggest shows ever is Breaking Bad. I think that last episode really, really hurt the Shakespearean scope of it, but that's another conversation for another episode. Any more thoughts on it, though, Donovan?
I think every week from now on, we just have... Natalie give us a list of six of her opinions about something, and we just read it out live on the air.
That's very fantastic.
That's my... She makes some very good points. Yeah, man, did they run that costume by focus groups or what? Like, I'm going to say it's possibly the worst MCU costume.
You think so?
I think they've mostly done a good job of kind of not making the costumes seem too ridiculous, right? Like, they're a kind of nice mix from, like, they're bright, they're comic book vibrant. But they don't just make you want to laugh. And man, I hated every second of that costume.
Interesting.
I thought it was terrible.
I was appreciative of how the costume helped him have powers, kind of, sort of.
Well, he had the upgrade, right? Like, his wings can do more now. That was cool. But the color scheme of it is just killing me.
I guess I'm forgiving of that because I know they'll tweak it.
Yeah,
that's one area they'll listen to fans, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
Up next in the MCU stuff, though, is going to be Loki on Disney Plus and Black Widow in theaters and Disney Plus Premium, whatever. So I bet we'll talk about both of those. And who knows, we might get another list from Natalie for those.
Don't tempt her with a good time.
That's it for this week. Our show will be back next Tuesday, and in the meantime, you can check out our crew online at the Alabama Take, where our weekly coverage of the Challenge All-Stars continues every Saturday morning. Also on the horizon, I'm not sure what we'll cover next week on the show. Probably a little Mayor of Easttown. That seems like a very show that's very rich for discussion. We'll have a couple other things probably to talk about, assuming soccer doesn't explode again, right? So we'll be back May 4th. Thanks, guys, and thanks, everybody, for listening. See you.